Since intelligence is the highest manifestation of matter, it is logically the lowest manifestation of consciousness, or spirit. And Jupiter, or the personal I, is enshrined in the substances of mortal mind where he controls his world through what man is pleased to term intellect. The Jupiterian intellect, however, is that which sees outward or toward the illusions of manifested existence, whereas the higher or spiritual mind, which is latent in most individuals, is that superior faculty which is capable of thinking inward or toward the profundities of self, in other words, is capable of facing toward and gazing upon the substance of reality. Thus the mind may be likened to the two-faced Roman god Janus. With one face this god gazes outward upon the world and with the other inward toward the sanctuary in which it is enshrined. The two-faced mind is an excellent subject for meditation. The objective or mortal mind continually emphasizes to the individual the paramount importance of physical phenomena, the subjective, or immortal mind. If given opportunity for expression, combats this material instinct by intensifying the regard for that which transcends the limitations of the physical perceptions. Subservient to Jupiter who, bearing his thunderbolt and accompanied by his royal eagle is indeed the king of this world, are Neptune and Pluto. Tlic god Neptune, or course, is not to be regarded as either the planet or as an influence derived. 18 Lectures on Ancient Philosophy. The Enneager of the Absolute 19. From the planet, but as the lord of the middle sphere of the inferior world. In man the middle sphere between mind and matter is occupied by emotion or feeling. The instability of human emotion is well symbolized by the element of water, which is continually in motion, the peaceful surface of which can be transformed into a destroying fury by forces moving above its broad expanse. The emotional nature of man is closely associated with the astral light or magical sphere of the ancient and medieval magicians. In this plane illusion is particularly powerful. As one writer has wisely observed, it is a land of beauty, a garden of flowers, but a serpent is entwined about the stem of each. Among the Oriental mystics this sphere of the astral light is considered particularly dangerous for those who are aspiring to an understanding of spiritual mysteries are often enmeshed in this garden of Kundry, and believing they have found the truth are carried to their destruction by the flow of this astral fluid. Riding in his chariot drawn by sea horses and surrounded by nereids riding upon sporting dolphins, Neptune carries in his hand the trident, a symbol common to both the lord of the illusion and the red-robed tempter. Neptune is the lord of dreams, and all mortal creatures are dreamers. All that mankind has accomplished in the countless ages of its struggle upward toward the light is the result of dreaming. Yet if dreams are not backed up by action and controlled by reason, they become a snare and a delusion, and the dreamer drifts onward into oblivion in a mystic ecstasy. You will remember that according to Greek mythology there was a river called the Styx which divided the sphere of the living from that of the dead. This river is the mysterious sea of Neptune which all men must cross if they would rise from material ignorance into philosophic illumination. This Neptunian sea may be likened to the ethers which permeate and bind together the material elements of nature. The sphere of Neptune is a world of ever-moving fantasy without beginning and without end, a mystical maze through which souls wander for uncounted ages if once caught in the substances of this shadowy dreamland. 20 Lectures on Ancient Philosophy. The lowest division of the Jupiterian sphere is under the dominion of Pluto, the regent of death. Pluto is the personification of the mass physical attitude of all things toward OB. objective life. Pluto may be termed the principle of the mortal code, in accordance with which nature lives and moves and has her being. Pluto may also be likened to an intangible atmosphere permeated with definite terrestrial instincts. On consciously inhaling this atmosphere, man is enthused by it and accepts it as the basis of living. The individual who is controlled by the Plutonic miasma contracts a peculiar mental and spiritual malaria which destroys all transcendental instinct and spiritual initiative, leaving him a psychical invalid already. Two-thirds a victim of the Plutonic plague. As Plato so admirably says, the body is the sepulchre of the soul, and whereas Neptune is symbolic of the astral or elemental soul, which is a mysterious emanation from elementary nature, Pluto is the god of the underworld, the deity ruling the spheres of the mysterious circle of being and therefore represents the lowest degree of Jupiterian light, which is physical matter. Hades, or the land of the dead, is simply an environment resulting from crystallization. Everything that exists in a crystallized state furnishes the environment of Hades for whatever life is evolving through it. Thus the lower universe is ruled over by three apparently heartless gods: birth, growth, and decay. From their palaces in space these deities hurl the instruments of their wrath upon hapless humanity and elementary nature. But he who is fortunate enough to escape the thunderbolts of Jove will yet fall beneath the trident of Neptune or be torn to pieces by the dogs of Father Dis, Pluto. The ancient Greeks occasion ally employed a centaur to represent man, thus indicating that out of the body of the beast which feels upon its back the lash of outrageous destiny rises a nobler creature possessed of God given reason, who through sheer force of innate divinity shall become master of those who seek to bind him to a mediocre end. While on the subject of the dot, the line, and the circle, there is one very simple application of the principle which we insert in order to emphasize the analogies existing through the tetrahedron of the absolute 21 entire structure of human thought. Take a simple problem in grammar. The noun, which is the subject of the sentence, is analogous to the dot. The verb, which is the action of the subject, is analogous to the line, and the object, which is the thing acted upon, is analogous to the circle. These analogies may also be traced through music and color and through the progression of chemical elements. Always the trinity of the dot, the line, and the circle has some correspondent, for it is the basis upon which the entire structure of existence and function, both universal and individual, has been raised. Consider this fundamental symbolism, philosophize upon it, dream about it, for an understanding of these symbols is the beginning of wisdom. There is no problem, whether involved with the simple mechanism of an earthworm or the inconceivable complex mechanism of a universe, that has not been constructed upon the triangular foundation of the dot, the line, and the circle. These are the proper symbols of the creative, preservative, and disintegrative agencies which manifest the incomprehensible of solute before temporary creation. The three worlds we have outlined are the supreme, the superior, and the inferior worlds of the Orphic theology as revealed by Pythagoras and Plato. The supreme world is the sphere of the one indivisible and ever-enduring Father. The superior world is the sphere of the gods, the progeny of the Father, and the inferior world is the sphere of mortal creatures, who are the progeny of the gods. Therefore, says Pythagoras, men live in the inferior world, God in the supreme world. And the men who are gods and the gods who are men in the intermediate plane. You will recall that it was said of Pythagoras, or as by his disciples that there were of two-footed creatures. Three kinds, gods, men, and Pythagoras. It should be inferred that the dot represents the gods, the circle men, and the line connecting them Pythagoras, or the personification of that superhuman wisdom which binds cause and effect inextricably together, and which is the hope of salvation for the lesser. The deity dwelling in the supreme world and which the Platonists termed the One, was, according to the Scandinavians, All Father, the sure foundation of being. In India it was Brahma. 22 lectures on ancient philosophy. And in Egypt, Amun. The line always represented the Savior. Gods, they being the eldest sons or firstborn of intangible deity. The line bears witness of the dot as the light bears witness of the life. All this gives a clue to the statement in the New Testament, Whoso hath seen the Son, hath seen the Father, for the Son is in the Father and the Father in the Son. In other words, whoso hath seen the line, hath seen the dot. For the dot is in the line and the line is in the dot. In the ancient Jewish rites the line was Michael, the archangel of the Sun, in Scandinavia, Balder the Beautiful. It is to the lower world of men that the light, the dot pouring into the line, personified as the universal Savior, descends to redeem consciousness from the darkness of a living grave. The circumference of the circle. The mystery God who lifted souls to salvation through his own nature thus represents the line, the divine symbol of the way of achievement, for it is written that none shall come unto the Father save by the Son. And none of those creatures dwelling in the circumference can reach the center or dot save by ascending the hypothetical line of the radius. The line is the bridge connecting cause with effect. In Immanuel Kant's philosophy we find the dot designate the noumenon and the circumference the phenomenon. The former the reality, the later the unreality. The line, the human mind, must ever be the agency that bridges the void between them. In the Platonic philosophy there are three manners of being. 1. Gods, or those most proximate to the absolute, who dwell within the nature of the dot, 2, men, or those who are most distant from the absolute, who dwell in the circumference of the circle, 3, the heroes and the demigods, who are suspended between divinity and humanity and who dwell in the sphere of the line. So, according to philosophy, the line is a ladder up which man ascends to light from his infernal state and down which he descends in his involution. The fall of man is the descent down the ladder from the dot to the circumference, the resurrection or redemption of man is his return from the circumference to the dot. Of such importance arc.